Welcome to Canary in a Cornfield, a podcast from the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement, where we explore how the policies that shape our food and farming systems impact our health, our communities, and our future. As most of our listeners probably know, the Harkin Institute was founded upon the retirement of longtime public servant and Iowa legend Tom Harkin in order to continue doing high-quality work on the policy issues that were important to him. In the last episode, we previewed a presentation from 16 leading scientists about a recently released report focused on water quality issues in central Iowa. Central Iowa has long been facing serious water challenges, likely due to industrial agricultural practices in Iowa, and this report confirmed that hypothesis. Among the report's findings were that 80% of the nitrate load in central Iowa were coming from agriculture, and that despite politicians and various trade groups trumpeting supposed major progress on this issue, all signs pointed to the problems getting worse every year. The presentation from four of the scientists involved in the report happened on Monday, August 4th. If you haven't already, please watch the full presentation from the scientists, which you can find on the Harkin Institute website or on my Canary in a Cornfield Substack, which will include some show notes from this podcast episode. There was an incredible response to the report and to the presentation. From what I've heard from others, the response is something that hasn't been seen in Iowa, at least not for a very long time. We had over 600 people attend in person. Over 2,100 people have viewed it now online just a few days after the event. We also had three documentary film crews in attendance. I'm not even sure what to make of that. But it really feels like, based on the energy in that room and a lot of noise being made by truth tellers around the state, that maybe a movement for change is starting to take shape against this backdrop of daily bad news. I was curious to hear what various experts thought about this presentation, and that's what this podcast episode is focused on. I was really honored to have as guests Aaron Lehman, president of the Iowa Farmers Union, Colleen Fowle, the water program director at the Iowa Environmental Council, Amy Collar, the CEO of Des Moines Water Works, and Audrey Chan Lam, who manages the Environmental Health Initiative at the University of Northern Iowa Center for Environment and Energy Education Program. Before we jump into the panel, I'm also including an interview with John Norris, the former Polk County administrator who initially came up with the idea of the report, to describe what the goals were from the get-go. I think the interview with John provides valuable context for thinking about the report and how to move forward. And finally, though this episode and the last one may sound very Central Iowa specific, I think it really fits with the theme of this podcast. The intensive agriculture with minimal to non-existent regulations happening in the Midwest might hit Iowa first, but the risks that include high nitrate levels, harmful algal blooms, and even antibiotic-resistant bacteria could be the warning signs of a larger public health crisis. So with no further ado, I'll jump into my interview with John Norris, former Polk County Administrator, before turning to the panel discussion. John Norris, very nice for you to join us here, and I hope you are feeling good about the fact that this report has just come out and is generating so much discussion. Since you are the originator of the report, I was hoping you could say a little bit more about how the report initially came about and what you were hoping to see from it.
Well, thanks, Adam. Great to be on Canary in a Cornfield. When the Polk County Supervisors decided to make water quality one of their primary investment areas with the American Recovery Act program, I pulled together a big water roundtable of folks interested in water. And the focus was really a lot about doing the stuff that both Polk County had been doing with expanding wetlands, doing the batch and build program, buying the cover crop seeder. And what I thought was missing was we're doing all this stuff that's being implemented and advocated by the state and the federal folks. But I was worried that the legislature cut funding for testing, and we had to have some baseline understanding of where we're at, what's in the water and where's it coming from, so we can measure against what we're doing. And as we saw in the report, we actually have been spending a lot of money and it's gotten worse. That was my fear. That was my hunch. But I knew we had to have a bulletproof scientific study to push back against the special interests who are just trying to say, well, this, we're working on it, spending lots of money, and it's all Band-Aid stuff. It's not getting to the source of the problem. So we needed, I thought, in central Iowa, and I think this is probably cut and paste this all over the state, because it's the same practices, even though they may not be in the Des Moines and Raccoon River watershed. So people can be aware. And then, so the ultimate goal here is know where we're at. And if there continues to be a danger level in our water supply, which this report clearly says there is, we're not doing enough and we're not doing it right. And we have to have policymakers, elected officials, be responsive to hard data and facts so we can get to the source of the problem.
And so once you came up with that strategy, how did you go about planning what the report would look like and finding the right personnel?
So there was never an intent to plan what the report would look like. The directive was unfiltered, unbiased. You guys are scientists. Tell us the truth. What is in the water? Where is it coming from? And then make some recommendations to what we can do about it. And fortunately, Jen Terry, who had been working at the Des Moines Water Works, is very well versed on this and knows the scientific community. The fact that she is willing to come over and help lead this project was a huge part of its success. And then the scientists who are willing to sign on board and be a part of this. And let's be honest, in the state, there's some political risk for them in doing that. So I admired their courage and their dedication to this project and the over 4,000 hours they put into pulling together this research report. It really can be a game changer for our future water quality in the state of Iowa.
Last question for you. What do you hope the average reader gets out of this report?
Well, my hope is they read it. They realize that we're not addressing the source of the problem. It's getting worse. And that they need to take action. It really is in the hands now of Iowans to demand that this problem be addressed in a way that will solve the problem, not just mask the problem with Band-Aid solutions. So when you empower people with information, a lot of people are willing to take action. And that's the critical piece next, is how we advocate, how we develop policy alternatives and advocate for them so that we can get to the source of the problem. And certainly it has to involve the ag community. They've got to be a part of solving the problem. But an old axiom I point to a lot is you don't put the people who created the problem in charge of solving the problem. They need to be engaged in solving the problem, but not in charge of solving the problem. And what we've done so far is just let the ag community dictate what the terms of their involvement or what they're going to do. And we're not getting anywhere with that. And so, yeah, I kind of live by that axiom of if someone created the problem, you want someone else to help you with solving the problem.
And when you say ag community, I'm guessing you don't necessarily mean individual farmers, but rather the policy, the lobbyists and the politicians and the big trade organizations that design the way policy incentivizes certain practices and disincentivizes others.
Your founder, Senator Harkin, knows as well or better than anybody, our agricultural policy in America has for decades not been set by farmers, but it's been set by the folks who benefit from being in control of our agricultural production through federal policy and some state policy. And that's not served anyone well but them. And I saw that when I was working at the United Nations, and I saw the prevalence of American ag interests wanting to get involved in food production in other nations, and the mindset we're going to do this just like we do it in America. And that was a big red flag for me that this is not what's in the best interest of them. And I'll give you one example. When I was at the United Nations, it was 2015 in the International Year of Soils. And I was at a conference with representatives from probably 25 other countries. And we introduced ourselves. And I told them, well, I was an Iowa farm kid, raised on a farm in Iowa. And they all just lit up. It was obvious that the reputation of our soil and our ag production was just prevalent throughout the world. But then one of the international scientists stepped in after I spoke and tell everybody, yes, but don't farm like they do in Iowa, because they're not going to have their soil for long. And that sent me home with a passion for this issue of not just water quality, but soil health, how it's all interconnected with our food production. And we are on a non-sustainable path.
I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us, and I do think you've done everything you can to put the tools in the hands of Iowans with this scientifically bulletproof information, as you say.
Couldn't be more pleased, and now just ready for next steps.
So that was John Norris, former administrator for Polk County and originator of the report. We'll now jump into my interview with Aaron Lehman of the Iowa Farmers Union, Amy Koller of Des Moines Waterworks, Colleen Fowle of the Iowa Environmental Council, and Audrey Tronlam from UNI's CEEE. Well, I am just really thrilled to be joined with such an excellent panel to respond to this important report. My first question, really for everyone, is what was your main takeaway after watching that presentation on Monday? And maybe you could say a little bit about your organization before you say your reaction, since we have a national audience, so they know a little bit more about where each of the groups is coming from. So, Amy, would you mind jumping in first?
Happy to. Thanks for having me on such an important topic. I'm 2.5 weeks in as the CEO of Des Moines Water Works, and I've been here for 25 years. And Des Moines Water Works in the past, prior to 2025, has been the regional provider for Central Iowa. But effective the beginning of this year, Central Iowa Water Works was formed, which is now the regional provider and responsible for the production of water. Des Moines Water Works, though, is the largest contract operator. So we continue to operate the plants that we always have and provide that drinking water to Central Iowa Water Works. And so, of course, we have long been focused on the quality of our source water and the quality of our drinking water. And so for me, and Des Moines Water Works, the biggest takeaway is that our rivers, primarily the Des Moines and Raccoon Rivers, that we rely on every day for drinking water to serve 20% of the residents of the state of Iowa, those rivers continue to face some real challenges. We're not seeing the improvement that we need to see. And I think that the assessment reinforces the need for greater focus on nitrate contamination. In particular, because as we experienced this summer in central Iowa, nitrate remains a persistent threat to public health. Our mission is to protect public health. So this, of course, is a great concern to us. But also there are weather extremes. The report called out climate change and how the land is used upstream as well. So between both of those factors, we're seeing stress on both the quality and the quantity of water. And I think that the report really drives home that we need to acknowledge that we have a problem. We need to think long-term and set science-based goals and then all work together to protect our water sources, especially upstream.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and definitely seems like there needs to be more acknowledgement of the problem in some quarters in the state. That audience seemed to be very aware of the problems. The audience reactions were really something to behold. And I think your answer ties in nicely to Audrey's work. So Audrey, maybe you could take this question on also.
Yeah, happy to. Thanks for having me, Adam. My name's Audrey. I oversee the environmental health program at the University of Northern Iowa Center for Energy and Environmental Education. In my role, I find myself doing a lot of awareness raising about the issues of land use and downstream harms, specifically as they relate to human health and overall public health in Iowa. We have an initiative called Farming for Public Health that ties in a lot of these issues that were raised in the report. So I was extremely happy to see specific call out of human health impacts, especially through nitrate contamination in drinking water. The science is pretty settled on nitrates of 10 parts per million being long-term harmful to human health. And so having really beautiful graphs and excellent explanations from the experts in the panel during the event on Monday was just fantastic in being able to communicate that this is an issue that needs to be addressed immediately, especially for populations that may be more vulnerable, those who may not be able to install at the tap filtration systems, or populations like pregnant women, for example, who are more vulnerable to low doses of nitrates in their drinking water.
I also do a lot of work with pesticides at the CEEE at my center in our Farming for Public Health program. And so in both the presentation and the written report, I loved and really appreciated the specific call out of pesticides as being a significant contaminant of concern in Iowa. You don't often hear that being explicitly stated. So I really, really appreciated that. And of course, you can't ignore the fact that the crowd was just absolutely activated. So that was a huge takeaway for me as well.
Yeah, that was a very pleasant surprise to see just how motivated people were. And your comments about vulnerable populations, one of the surprising things for me was I didn't realize the extent to which so many people relied on fishing, not just for recreation, but actually as a form of sustenance. So that was a really interesting finding. All right. So now turning now to one of our great partners, Iowa Environmental Council. Colleen, what was your thoughts on the presentation?
Thanks, Adam, for having me this morning. As Adam mentioned, my name is Colleen Fowle. I'm the Water Program Director for the Iowa Environmental Council. And the council has been working for 30 years across the state to build coalitions for a healthy and just environment for all. We advocate and educate in environmental topics, and our organization is specifically divided into water, climate, and energy programs. And so as a water program director, obviously this lecture was of utmost importance to my program and how I can work to build some of those coalitions across the state. It's pretty apparent that Iowa faces unique challenges due to land use changes, modifications of our waterways, industrialization of agriculture and urbanization in all corners of our state. The scientists really highlighted that we have asked our land to support all of these activities while climate change is fundamentally altering the precipitation and stream flow in our state, all the while we've been disregarding some of the ecological signs that the scientists pointed out. And it's really showing that the land and water is reaching this point where we can no longer sustain the activities that we are asking it to support in the same ways that we are currently using the land. And so this results in an impact to human health and quality of life and the economic vitality of our communities. The presentation made it apparent that we need to acknowledge the science and increase monitoring in our state to continue to look for some of these indicators. And then ultimately, we need to measure the success of our implemented solutions based on that data and improved water quality rather than how many dollars we're spending on these solutions.
Yeah, definitely. That stood out, that line about what we're measuring is really important. And I hope on a future podcast, I'd like to have someone talk about something called true cost accounting, which looks at not just the easily observable money spent on certain things, but trying to take into account a more holistic understanding of all the economic costs to society of different policies, which of course would include public health and environmental degradation and the financial implications of those. Because sometimes when we're looking at things through an economic lens, it's easy to just focus on the profits made by certain industries in relation to money spent. Aaron, I wanted to turn to you. I've said this on your lunch and learns, but I'll repeat it here that I just think Iowa Farmers Union is one of the absolute most important organizations in this state. And I'm such a huge fan of everything you guys do. So thank you for joining me today. What was your main takeaway from the presentation?
You know, I'm so happy to be here, Adam. Thank you for those kind words. The Farmers Union is made up of family farmers spread across the entire state. And of course, we have a huge priority on clean water. Our farmers rely on clean water. But what I took away from the report, first and foremost, was that the challenges we face are very real. And this consolidated a lot of thinking on this, some that we've known, but some that we need to illustrate even further to acknowledge what the problem is. But beyond that, it really emphasizes the need for a public farmer partnership to make a difference on our farms, make a difference for our landscapes, and make a difference for clean water. And that is happening at a time when we're seeing a lot of cuts and even more proposed cuts to those very partnerships that farmers rely on and the public relies on to make a difference on our clean water efforts. So that was the biggest takeaway I had in addition to the comments that our other guests have made.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I wanted to follow up on that actually with you because I know you've been doing a great job of communicating to the media and communicating to the public about how some of the cuts have been impacting farmers and specifically through the lens of conservation. Could you say a little bit more about how the federal budget could impact practices that could improve water quality?
Yeah, we have had a number of farmers who were implementing conservation programs on their farm and climate-related projects on their farm, even though they had long been down the route and started spending and were seeking reimbursements for contracts they had signed, and those contracts were not honored, and there was a lot of confusion, and has led to a lot of farmer distrust, even those who are motivated and innovative and want to put these practices in place. It really inhibits the implementation of these practices that will help their farm and help our water efforts. Beyond that, we know that when farmers are seeking to put in conservation practices on the farm, there's a very vital role for technical assistance. And we're seeing some very disturbing budget proposals to slash technical assistance that helps farmers put practices in the field, on their pastures, in a way that really is effective and can make a real difference for clean water. As farmers, we know that we can't expect to solve our problems just by throwing money at them. We need to have practices that can work. And when having that expertise to help us put those practices in place that actually work and then provide a real public benefit, we need to be able to measure practices and what benefit we're getting from them in order to make a real difference. And all those things are unfortunately under a lot of threat right now.
I wanted to turn to a question of thinking about, on what level is change most needed, or how do we think about different levels of change, whether it's individuals being educated or policy changes or policies at the state level or federal level? I guess my first question is, what do you guys think about the importance of educating individual people? So for the average citizen, what are some important takeaways from this report in terms of what would be good for a particular citizen to know in terms of what they can do in their own lives?
I can take a first stab at that if you don't mind. Before I do that, I actually want to add on to Aaron's comments about funding, because clearly we're moving in the wrong direction with those comments. And at a state level, what I hear when I talk to farmers and watershed coordinators is the funding is not the problem. It's the time to implement the practices and to find compatible practices with the land. But I think that the funding, you know, 61% of Iowa's drainage comes from the Raccoon and the Des Moines watersheds, which impacts 600,000 central Iowans. Yet the state funding, Aaron was talking about federal funding, but the state funding is not distributed based on those data metrics. And so I think that the money at a state level, one change in policy or funding policy could be that the money follows the problems and that it would be distributed perhaps a little differently than it is today. In terms of the average citizen and how can they receive and how can we better communicate? One of the striking things that I took away from the presentation was the discussion on nitrate monitoring and how we have basically cut at the knees the monitoring system by reducing that funding by 75%. Again, a step in the wrong direction, because that is hiding really important data from the public and from the stakeholders that need that information the most. So to me, that's a low-hanging fruit, is to continue funding that type of robust monitoring system. And rather than decrease it, we should be talking about increasing monitoring and communication and making that data available to all residents.
Yeah. And could you say a little bit more about their groups that are encouraging citizens to also go out and do monitoring, which is important, but there's also a higher level of monitoring that requires more investment of funds. So could you just say a little bit about how citizen monitoring interacts with the type of monitoring Waterworks does and other larger scale methods for detecting what's in the water?
Yeah, thanks for that question. Both types of monitoring are important, citizen and the monitoring that Des Moines Waterworks does. We actually perform over 200 tests every day throughout our system, and we have the most complex laboratory. It's certified in the state. It is second in the number of tests and analyses it performs, second only to the state hygienic lab. So we are very proud. We have very sophisticated equipment that we rely on to make sure that we are up to the minute aware of what is happening in our source waters and our finished drinking water. And we monitor that water at every step in the process. So it is really important that citizens are advocates of clean water and get involved and take part in the watershed testing and rivers and stream testing and monitoring. But Des Moines Waterworks has incredibly sophisticated equipment that we lean on very heavily. And this summer, during the nitrate situation and the lawn watering ban, there were a lot of customers who were testing nitrate at home. And so it was a challenge to manage that, frankly, because many were using the wrong test strips. They weren't testing the right thing and it was creating a sense of panic. And so we had to do some education about that. But yes, we take very seriously our mission to protect public health. And so we are on that all day long, every day.
Audrey, the CEEE at UNI, you have education in your title. Could you say a little bit more about the power you've seen of educating people and how that can make a difference?
Yeah. So for me, I think that education, especially about such a complex issue, one that is tied to a whole system of a lot of different variables, is very, very important to inform an engaged and civically activated population. I think that understanding what is going on the fields in our state, likely in your backyard, if you live in Iowa, is really important, knowing what is going on, but why it's going on. Contextualization really is key. The system that is fueled by a lot of policy, federal level policy that incentivizes and also implicitly de-incentivizes certain practices, is at play here. And the system as it is working exactly as it is designed. So this is the product of lots of policy. And I think that it's really important for Iowans to know that, just have a baseline understanding of that in order to not be lured into the sense that it is a very hostile or dichotomous issue, right? It's not a Iowans or conservationists against farmers. And environmental education is really important, especially on this topic, to make sure that it doesn't get unfairly dichotomized into something like that, because it goes much, much further upstream to create the system that we're faced with here in our state. And I think maybe I'll leave it at that without getting much more complicated, but it is really, really big and there's lots of nuance. And I think, like I said, contextualization really is key in order to be able to have that nuanced discussion that's really necessary right now as we're beginning to talk about action steps.
Yeah, I appreciate that point. And I think maybe that it makes sense to see if Aaron has any thoughts on that as well, just in terms of, I guess you've already pointed a little bit to this, Aaron, but the interactions between farmers and the public and how to think about that collaboration going forward. Could you say a little bit more about how Iowa Farmers Union thinks about that when it comes to policy?
Our farmers have again and again shown that we need to prioritize making good options available for farmers. Too often farmers are being forced to make choices between bad options, options that ultimately lead to circumstances that lead to less healthy landscapes and less clean water. So making sure that all of our systems are in place to encourage strong options for farmers that lead to better outcomes is going to be the only thing that actually leads to some real changes in our fields and our pastures and ultimately to our landscapes and to our water. So I think keeping that front and center is important when we educate our membership and the general public about what it's going to take to actually see effective changes on the landscape that lead to clean water, is that understanding that we need to put all of these land use decisions in the context of creating positive choices for farmers to make. And that's policy, and leads to real policy decisions at the local, state, and federal level in order to create those positive opportunities that can lead to decisions on our field and in our pastures that lead to real positive change.
I appreciate you putting it in the context of farmers trying to operate within a particular system. I wrote an op-ed for the Des Moines Register recently, and it was kind of in response to various groups or politicians saying, look how much farmers are doing and look how much money is being spent to approach this issue. And I guess my reaction was, yes, farmers are doing what they can, but they're also operating within this overall policy environment. And the fact that farmers are so motivated to make positive change on this issue, and yet the main things that we're measuring are showing that the problem is getting worse, suggests that the policy environment is not really supporting the farmers who want to do the right things. So anyways, I appreciate the point you made.
Adam, I think that's so true. You know, we farmers have a very clear understanding that their farm and the agriculture industry is constantly changing. And they are constantly making choices about innovations that can make sense on their farm and in their community. So we're not in a static industry, but we react to real signals that can make a difference. And putting those real incentives, those real signals in place that prioritizes clean water will lead to innovation on the farm that will lead to cleaner water.
Absolutely. You guys are constantly having to adapt to many different changes happening. Colleen, I know Iowa Environmental Council does a lot of education as well. But I also wanted to get your thoughts on some policy changes that might jump to your mind after seeing this presentation.
I think that the speakers that have already talked about this issue today before me really highlight the complexity of the issue and potential solutions going forward. And they've alluded to some of these potential solutions already. First and foremost, Amy talked about data collection, the need for additional data collection and transparency and sharing that data with the public. And so that's an avenue we need to explore. Funding for more water monitoring and change in the ways that we can distribute that information. Audrey touched on education and nuanced technical information and the systems and structures in which we operate. Specifically, when she was talking about that, it made me think about the watershed management approach that was talked about in the presentation. We know that waterways do not distinguish between city and county boundaries. So we need to think about how we can manage our resources in a different way rather than looking at it from a city limit or a county perspective. Meaningful action has to go beyond those artificial divisions and support planning and decision making at the watershed level. And I think at the state level, that can be done through funding coordinators to lead efforts in each watershed and encourage nature-based solutions such as riparian buffers, wetlands that will slow the flow of our water and filter it along its pathway, and therefore provide downstream water quality benefits.
Thank you for that. And I think your point about boundaries made me think of the Waterworks motto. So Amy, I was wondering if you had any reaction to that about how different communities along the watershed work together.
Yes, I agree completely. Des Moines Waterworks agrees completely with Colleen's comment. We have a motto that we use, I think, downstream, because everything that's happening on the land is impacting users downstream. And so we, as society, as responsible citizens, need to always be thinking about that, whether we are rural residents, urban residents, water utilities. You know, we all need to be thinking downstream. And we talk a lot within Des Moines Waterworks walls about a watershed-based approach being the best approach because they don't follow human-made boundaries like cities and counties. They follow natural hydrological boundaries. And in addition, each watershed is different And there isn't a one-size-fits-all solution. And so by taking a watershed-based approach, we can set goals for each specific watershed and implement practices and see outcomes that, again, are going to be the most impactful for that particular area. So I really think that that is something that we need to focus on. And I agree, we need more watershed coordinators to get more practices implemented in the ground. I think the newer batch and build approach has been very well received, and they've been able to more efficiently get practices into the ground. So I think that's the way to go.
Another question for all of you. Do you see your organization doing anything in response to this report? I know it's only been out a short amount of time, and also that some of the information in there was known, even if not compiled all in one place, in the way that the report did really well. But do any of you see changes in how you are working on any particular projects as a result of this presentation?
I will say that we have long been focused at Des Moines Water Works on water quality, and we continue to be focused on that. But we are also, and I think that this report highlighted the need for this, preparing for times when quantity is the issue as opposed to quality. The issue this summer with the nitrate and the lawn watering ban, of course, was quality. We had plenty of water, just not plenty of treatable water at the demand levels that we were seeing. And so Des Moines Water Works has recently completed a climate adaptation plan within the last year. And so we will be implementing those recommendations from that plan in an effort to make us more resilient. Forming Central Iowa Water Works was a great start to that, because the number one priority for members coming together and regionalizing was to create resilience in the water system with this interconnected transmission and treatment plants, and also critical redundancy during droughts or floods, tornadoes, derechos, all those things we're vulnerable to. And so I think the next steps for Des Moines Water Works and Central Iowa Water Works are to look at diversifying our water sources even more than we have today. We've done that over the years with every treatment plant and capacity expansion that we've undergone, but we'll be doing more of that. We haven't talked about this, but the study also spent a good deal of time talking about harmful algal blooms and the toxins that they can release. And microcystin is the toxin. They're not well understood, frankly. When do harmful algal blooms release the toxin? So far, our conventional treatment has been effective at treating and removing when we do find it, but we need to better understand it and study it. And so just enhancing our resiliency, understanding harmful algal blooms and microcystin is something that the report talked about as actions. And that's something that Des Moines Water Works and Central Iowa Water Works will be doing.
Amy, while I have you on, there's something that I found really remarkable, and I think maybe you'd be the best person to explain this. I've gotten tours of Des Moines Water Works facilities, and they're just so incredible and so impressive. And that just makes it all the more remarkable that we had to have this lawn watering ban. It's not like Des Moines Water Works is operating with an old system for nitrate removal. It's really the absolute top of the line. And even with that level of technology, the rivers can surpass the levels that we're able to treat per day, right?
That's right. And, you know, the system was largest in the world when it was constructed. I haven't researched it to know if we can still make that claim, so I usually stay away from that. But you're right, it's very sophisticated, and it's a workhorse, and we're so lucky to have it. Many small rural communities that fight nitrate as well do not have that technology. And so there are 40 other utilities in the state that have problems with nitrate, and some of them violate the standard. And so we do lean heavily on that nitrate removal facility. We show it off at the tours so that people can understand, but we can treat 10 million gallons a day through that nitrate removal facility, which should be ample. And during this summer, we've heard calls for you need to expand that. And there are a number of challenges related to that that are detailed, and we probably don't have time today. But I think the real question is, even if we could expand it, where do we stop? What do we design it to handle? The nitrate concentrations are not improving. And at some point, just expanding the fix, the treatment solution, that becomes an unsustainable solution. And we really need to go back and trace it to the root cause and solve the problem there.
Well said. If anyone else wants to jump in on the question about if your organization would do anything differently.
So kind of going back to that original question, Adam, about how the Iowa Environmental Council is responding, the release of this report, but also Harkin's willingness to host the discussion has really engaged the public in a meaningful way beyond what we've seen before in Iowa. And so the event is really building momentum. More residents are seeing now that we need to shift course with such a challenging problem. Many people need a seat at the table to engage in an honest discussion and creative solution finding. We know we have experts in our state who have devoted their lives to studying these issues, but we also have passionate Iowans at a local level who care really deeply about public health and their communities rather than pocketbooks of large corporations. So these are the voices we need to elevate in the conversation, and that's part of IEC's mission, is to continue elevating voices that don't normally have a seat at the table. And so we're just going to continue that original mission of building coalitions and partnerships, but now with a new wider audience and helping to make connections throughout the state so we can build off of successes in one part of the state and the other and taking those to a wider audience.
That's great. And that actually is a perfect transition to the last thing I wanted to ask all of you, which is we had, according to one count, 610 people in the room for the presentation and another 275 tuning in online. We now have 1,500 views of the YouTube feed. When we agreed to host this, we were not expecting that kind of huge response. And so what would you like to see from people who are really passionate about this issue? What do you think can be done with this base of over 1,000 people who really care about what's going on in the Central Iowa waterways? And maybe you could answer first, Colleen, but it's really for all the panelists.
I would encourage those of you who are listening to this podcast to share the information, share the conversations that you've heard in your circles, volunteer to host an event, just like was mentioned at the end of the scientific presentation, host a showing of the event and a follow-up discussion in your neighborhood or special interest group. There's a lot of wonderful nonprofit workers and organizations throughout the state who are building coalitions, just like the Iowa Environmental Council. We have smaller, more local organizations like the Driftless Water Defenders in Northeast Iowa and the Nishnabotna Water Defenders in Southwest Iowa that are continuing this work. And so I would encourage people to get more engaged on a local level in their own watershed and educate themselves on the issues that matter in their surrounding neighborhoods. There's so much more I could say, but I'm going to pass it off to my colleagues here.
Yeah, I really appreciate those comments. You know, in the farmers union world, we're going to be using the report to illustrate how important it is to have our farmers step with stories that can resonate with policy leaders, both at the local and state level, but also at the federal level. There are decisions being made very, very soon that impact this work. And it's scary how those would move us even farther away from addressing the problems in a real way. And what has the largest impact is indeed having people bring forward stories from their farm, from their family, from their community. We use those stories back with all the important data that has been shared and illustrated so well in this report, and bring that forward as effectively as we possibly can by working together. So that's what we think our next steps are.
I might jump in next and let Amy have the last word on that question. I would love to encourage all of the participants in the event, those who tuned in online, those who are still going down the rabbit hole, to dig in to the system of all of the really long fingers that are upstream and can turn into downstream solutions. And what I mean by that is dig into what those farmer stories are. What are farmers doing on the land that can help mitigate or reduce or eliminate the amount of agrochemicals going into a watershed? The report did such a good job in illustrating the disproportionate impacts of what's going on here and how it impacts Iowans, the disproportionate burden that our region is feeling because of the system that is before us. And it also contributes to a really large body of evidence that we at the Center and the Farming for Public Health program utilize to uplift these really, really important issues to Iowans. I would also flag something that I know Adam and you, Aaron, are really, really familiar with, but food and water are really, really tied together here. And so individual action that I don't know if we've touched too much on is finding where you can interact with farmers to actually procure your food locally, bringing diversity onto Iowa landscaping, farming in different ways, producing table food for people is a part of this discussion and can help be a part of the pattern of solutions, the constellation of solutions that we need to be talking about. So but that's my call to action here is individuals can get involved in the food system to also be a part of the water solution.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, Audrey. Thank you. Amy, your thoughts on what Des Moines Waterworks would love to see people do?
Yeah, I will start by saying that I was so encouraged by the energy and the interest around this effort and just healthy source water in general. This needs to be just the start or the continuation of the conversation and not the conversation. We need to make sure that we keep this momentum and keep this energy. And so we need everyone that was in that room, that has watched it online, that is going to listen to this podcast to be a part and to advocate for clean source water. We have a statewide problem, and I think the report does a nice job of calling that out. And again, I come from the perspective of safe drinking water, and everyone wants safe drinking water. It is not divided down political lines in terms of who uses and who needs drinking water every day. And yet this topic gets ensnarled in political entanglements, unfortunately. There are divisions and debates that can be distracting and disruptive to the conversation. And so I encourage all of those who are energized and interested to talk with legislators at all levels, state policy leaders, and really demand action and say that it's time. We have talked about it long enough, and we need to challenge Iowans to rise to the occasion and demand action and progress.
Well, that seems like an excellent way to end the program. So thank you all so much for joining me. I thought it was really wonderful to get all your perspectives. And I think with excellent organizations like the ones represented here and the energy that we're seeing in Central Iowa, I'm hopeful, maybe irrationally, but I'm hopeful that maybe some positive changes are coming down the road. But thank you all for the wonderful work you do. And thank you for joining me today. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Canary in a Cornfield. In upcoming episodes, I'll make sure to keep you updated on the progress from this report, as well as covering some other important issues about the connection between agriculture and public health, including avian flu, antibiotic resistance in agriculture, more on nitrates, and the impact of our food system on climate change. Thanks, and hope to see you next episode.